Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Yesterday, I harvested all of the remaining vegetables and took in the last of the plants that I wanted to save, something you may have been doing as well. In the snow, right? It was actually quite beautiful gardening as the snow was falling, and it did frost last night with temperatures in the upper 20s. It should get up into the low 40s today during the day, but frost is expected again tonight with around 31 degrees. So this may not be winter yet, but it is definitely the foreshadowing of winter, and summer is definitely over. During the week, it should warm up a bit with temperatures in the 50s, with warmer weather up to 60 degrees on Friday. Nights can still get down to freezing, though, throughout the week. It sounds like it will be sunny all week. And here's Dennis Hart with a roundup of Iowa in the news last week. Take it away, Dennis.
Thank you. It's good to be here on this Monday. Last week, new details emerged about the killing of Iowa State University student Celia Barkin Arosemena. Court documents showed that when suspect Colin Richards was interviewed the day Barkin Arosemena was found stabbed to death on an Ames golf course, Richards' hand was bleeding. Investigators said that injury was consistent with one of the serration marks found on Barkin Arosemena's body. Investigators have found three knives during their hunt for clues into the killing. One of them was found at an Ames campsite which Richards has been connected to. Richards appeared in court Friday morning. A judge decided that one of Richards' public defenders could continue representing him after prosecutors argued he had a potential conflict of interest. The judge also denied a prosecution motion asking that the hearing be closed to the public. And there was new information involving the Molly Tibbetts murder last week. Court records indicate that when investigators showed murder suspect Christian Bahena Rivera a photograph of a black Chevy Malibu that drove back and forth in the area where the University of Iowa student was running the night she vanished, he said, "Yes, that's my car." Meanwhile, a report from the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation was set to be delivered to Rivera's lawyers on Friday. Politics also made big news around the state of Iowa last week. The first debate between Republican Governor Kim Reynolds and Democratic challenger Fred Hubbell took place, and it featured fiery words about Hubbell's decision not to release his full tax returns and about Reynolds' management of the state's privatized Medicaid system. One of the sharpest exchanges during the debate Wednesday night involved Hubbell's tax returns. He showed reporters a summary of his returns for a single year, 2017, while Reynolds had released her full returns for 10 years. At one point, Reynolds asked Hubbell, "Why don't you release your tax statements so Iowans can see maybe what you're hiding or what you're embarrassed of?" Hubbell said he's released enough information about his personal finances. Meanwhile, Hubbell hammered Reynolds over the state's privatization of the $5 billion Medicaid program, saying private Medicaid management companies have cut crucial services to thousands of disabled Iowans without saving the state any money. Reynolds said the old state-administered Medicaid program was not stable and could not continue. Wednesday's debate in Des Moines was the first of three in a race that a recent Des Moines Register poll showed was tight, with 43% of voters saying they support Hubbell, 41% support Reynolds. Meanwhile, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders came to Iowa on Saturday, appearing at a fundraiser for Reynolds. Sanders talked about the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court, telling the crowd of Republicans that elections have consequences. She said the way Democrats had acted was, in her word, disgraceful. She also praised Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley for the way he conducted Senate Judiciary Committee hearings into Kavanaugh's nomination. Grassley also spoke at the event, saying that Kavanaugh's confirmation will energize Republicans in the final weeks leading up to next month's midterm elections. Also last week, President Trump came to Iowa, announcing that his administration would seek year-round access to gasoline with 15% ethanol, or E15. Most gas sold in the U.S. is 10% ethanol. The president spoke Tuesday night before a crowd of about 10,000 in Council Bluffs. He gave special shout-outs to Governor Reynolds and Congressman David Young, inviting both onto the stage to speak. He also praised Congressman Rod Blum and Steve King. Trump described Reynolds as, in his words, someone who has become a real star in the Republican Party. The president said that Reynolds' challenger in next month's gubernatorial election, Democrat Fred Hubbell, would get rid of ethanol. But Hubbell said he's long supported ethanol and the year-round sale of E15. Also last week, a jury found an Iowa man guilty of murdering two girls in a Guthrie Center arson. 27-year-old Patrick Thompson faces life in prison. Prosecutors had argued that Thompson set a house on fire to keep his stepsister from testifying against his stepfather about alleged sexual abuse. The blaze killed Thompson's 12-year-old stepsister and her 16-year-old cousin. Meanwhile, state investigators were helping in a death investigation last week after a body was found Tuesday in a Hamilton County residence. Sheriff's deputies had gone to a home on Kendall Young Road in Webster City, where they found a dead man. There was also word last week that two people died and another was injured in a house fire in Huxley. It took place on Sycamore Boulevard. 47-year-old Brett Van Ersveld and his 17-year-old son Daniel died. 44-year-old Julie McLean suffered smoke inhalation and was taken to a hospital. Two teenage daughters, 16 and 19 years old, escaped injury. Officials believe the fire started in the kitchen. It remains under investigation. Fire departments from Cambridge, Slater, Nevada, and Ankeny all assisted in rescue efforts. In Waterloo, school district officials canceled classes Wednesday at the district's three high schools because of a threat on social media. The threat mentioned West and Expo high schools, but classes were also canceled at East. Classes were not canceled at the district's elementary and middle schools. Meanwhile, there was word last week about another phone scam that's making its way around Iowa. This one involves callers who are impersonating Iowa State Police and who falsely claim they have seized a vehicle with drugs inside and that the vehicle is registered to the person they're calling. The phone calls are fake, and anyone who receives one should report it to local law enforcement. In Mason City, a woman was accused of stealing prescription drugs turned into the Mason City Police Department. 43-year-old Melinda Severs was charged with two counts of unlawful possession of prescription drugs. Authorities said she was working as an administrative assistant for the Mason City PD when she took the medications. Also last week, word that an Iowa farmer has lost tens of thousands of bees and pounds of honey after his hives in Ankeny were vandalized. Someone had removed straps securing the three hives and then hit the hives with logs, cinder blocks, and bricks. Each hive can house up to 60,000 bees, and many, if not most of them, died in last week's rains. Also last week, an Ankeny woman was charged with animal neglect after authorities said she tightly wound bungee cords around two of her dog's mouths for extended periods of time to keep them quiet. 27-year-old Elisa Andres had brought three dogs to the Animal Rescue League's animal control facility. One was an 11-week-old puppy, and the other two were adults with deep indentations around their muzzles and jaws. The woman initially told staff that the dogs had been abandoned, but it was later discovered the animals were hers. Police officers discovered that there had been 10 barking complaints at Andrea's apartment and that her landlord had told her she needed to surrender the dogs because of those complaints. In Cedar Rapids, the Convention and Visitors Bureau that was behind a festival that lost more than $2 million announced it was folding. Go Cedar Rapids had put on the three-day festival called Nubo Evolve in August. That festival cost nearly $4 million to put on and had generated $1.5 million in revenue. Meanwhile, the Des Moines City Council voted unanimously last week to repeal the city's panhandling ordinance. In effect, that move legalizes panhandling in the city. Des Moines legal experts said the former regulations against panhandling could be found unconstitutional and leave the city open to a court challenge. Two other cities, Grimes and Council Bluffs, have also moved to repeal their panhandling rules in recent weeks. There was also word last week that Des Moines is scrapping a decades-old plan to build a five-lane highway stretching from West Des Moines to downtown through the city's south side. City officials said traffic volume does not justify the $215 million price tag for the so-called Southwest Connector. Instead, the city will focus on improvements to other streets that commuters use to reach downtown. Also last week, word that nine University of Iowa fraternities were suspended for violating a moratorium on alcohol at fraternity and sorority parties. That drinking moratorium was enacted last year. And there was word that Iowa State University's student government approved a resolution asking the university to temporarily halt a new trademark policy that limits student groups' use of trademark names linked to the university. There was also word last week that the enrollment of international students at Iowa State University, the University of Iowa, and at the University of Northern Iowa has declined 18% since 2015. Among the reasons given, concerns about safety and the political climate in the United States. And there was a report that Simpson College in Indianola will lay off 13 full-time employees, including 12 faculty members, and eliminate the school's art department as it tries to cope with lower enrollment and changing student interests. Earlier this year, 10 other faculty positions were eliminated at Simpson. There was also word that the community of Indianola is moving forward to address the problems of deteriorating housing, abandoned vehicles, and lawns that are not being kept up. Last year, the city passed more stringent property maintenance rules. City officials say they're trying to get voluntary compliance, but when that doesn't work, they're taking steps, including hiring a contractor to cut back weeds and clear out garbage. The rules were adopted after residents complained and after city staff members identified some problem properties. Of course, College football always makes news around Iowa this time of year, and this past weekend was no exception. Iowa State stunned previously unbeaten West Virginia 30-14. The University of Iowa defeated Indiana 42-16. And the University of Northern Iowa defeated South Dakota 42-28. And that is your summary of news from around Iowa this past week. I'm Dennis Hart, reminding you that I'll be back here on Friday with a look at news from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
That music was Bootleggers Blues by Jake Sanders, who performed with the Lovestruck Balladeers, one of the groups that performed at Ragtime in Randall this past weekend. I went to hear them, and they were absolutely spectacular. Congratulations to the Ragtime in Randall team for a great day of beautiful music. And thank you, Dennis Hart, for providing a roundup of Iowa news from the past week. This is Local Talk. I'm your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. On October 3rd, the League of Women Voters for Ames and Story County held a forum for candidates running for the open seats for Iowa House Districts 45, 46, and 48. The forum was held at Nevada Public Library. We bring you here the opening statements from the candidates. The whole forum is too long to air on Local Talk, but we wanted you to hear what the candidates had to say. Iowa House Districts 45, 46, and 48 cover the towns of Ames, Kelly, Gilbert, Slater, and Sheldahl, northern Story County, and townships of Grant, Washington, Milford, Franklin, and Lafayette. Let's take a listen.
Good evening and welcome to the Nevada Public Library and the Forum for Candidates running for open seats in Iowa House Districts 45, 46, and 48. My name is Judy Trumpy and I'm a member of the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan political organization with the primary mission of encouraging active, informed citizen participation in their government. The candidates joining us today are from House District 45, Democrat Beth Wessel-Crochelle, incumbent, and her challenger, Republican Ben Brown, was not able to attend, but I will read his statement. From House District 46, Democrat and incumbent Lisa Heddens, who is unchallenged. From House District 48, Democrat Tim Winter, and he is challenging Republican Rob Bacon, who is the incumbent. And Rob could not be here tonight either because of previous commitments, but I'm going to read a statement regarding him. So we'll open with candidates' opening statements. We'll start with you, Beth.
Thank you to the League for sponsoring this event and for the library for hosting us. I always consider this one of my biggest forums for re-election and always enjoy it. So thank you very much for sponsoring it. I am honored to represent Iowa House District 45, which includes Wards 1 and 3 in Ames. It includes Kelly and Grant, Milford, and Washington townships. I'm proud of my tenure, and I look forward to continuing my service. I serve on Health and Human Services Budget Sub, the Judiciary, Public Safety, and I'm the ranking member of Human Resources. I feel that I've always worked in the best interest of Iowans, from supporting education, pre-K to postgraduate work, ensuring quality health care for all Iowans, improving access to mental health care, supporting real programs for clean water and soil preservation, and defending a woman's right to make her personal health care choice. But I feel the last 2 years have been very challenging for Iowans. We've seen a loss of investment in Iowa, in Iowa's higher education. We've had extremely small increases in our support for pre-K through 12 schools, and workers have lost their rights to collective bargaining. We've watched the suppression of voting rights, and we have put health care reform at risk. Also, Iowa passed the most restrictive abortion laws in the nation, putting women's health care at risk and putting our residency programs at the University of Iowa at risk, not only the OBGYN program, but also the prenatal or the newborn program. But the regents definitely took the hardest hit, and students are paying that price. They are looking at increased tuition and fees, and they are going to be looking at more. I'm the mother of a student at a Regent University, and I feel the pain of many families across the state when it comes to the funding of these programs. I'm a little disappointed at the representation at the table today. I wish that my opponent were here. I have not ever met him, and it is October 3rd, so we are a little over a month away, and I've been told he's not going to attend the next forum that I have, which is Sunday. So, well, I think it's hard for my constituents to know and to be able to ask questions about both candidates, and I think that's important. So I thank everybody who's here, and look forward to your questions this evening.
Thank you. I'll read Ben's statement. Ben is challenging Bev. Hello. I want to thank everyone for coming here today and Mary Sand for allowing me to have my opening statement read at this forum. I apologize for not being able to make it here today. I have recently started a new position, and I'm unable to make it due to work. I was born in Ames, and I've spent my whole life within its community, growing up on a farm 20 miles north of here. Both of my parents worked in Ames as I was growing up, and my grandparents live here. A little over 6 years ago, I moved into Ames when I graduated from high school and matriculated at Iowa State University in agricultural biochemistry. While at ISU, I received both a master's and bachelor's degree in biochemistry, as well as a minor in economics. After defending my master's thesis, I had the opportunity to work as an adjunct chemistry professor at DMAC in Boone last semester, where I relished the chance to bless the next generation by teaching what I know best. When I began seriously discussing beginning a campaign for the state legislature, many of my friends and coworkers were very confused why a biochemist wanted to have anything to do with politics. But the reality is I've always enjoyed government. I love looking at the process and doing everything possible to understand all sides to an argument. Whatever my initial bias is on a subject, I immediately turn to the opposite bias and do all I can to disrupt my initial bias so I can understand the whole situation. My free time consists of reading the thick old classics, which are the bedrock of our economic philosophy, such as Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith, and political philosophy such as Democracy in America by Alex de Tocqueville. Ultimately, the reason I'm running is that I saw a flaw in our voting system that I realized we could change. In the 2016 presidential election, I know many individuals who voted not because they liked either candidate, but rather placed a vote to keep the opposing candidate out of office. Alternately, I also know individuals who voted for a third-party candidate because they could not, in good conscience, vote for the two primary candidates. Effectively, they split their vote, which hurts more than helped them. Many individual votes did not accurately match their preferences. Americans shouldn't have to feel like they're choosing the lesser of two evils. The way our current voting system is set up naturally leads to a two-party system, but a two-party system doesn't lead to collaboration, but rather divisiveness. A two-party system doesn't accurately portray people's preferences because not everyone fits in one of the two options. There is a better option, but it requires the courage to change our unproductive method of voting. Our current voting system in America is first past the post. This means someone can win the election simply by getting more votes than any other person, even if they do not have the majority. Since everyone only gets one vote, this encourages party formation so individuals can have a better chance of getting someone of close political affiliation into office, even if it isn't their first choice. But what if we weren't limited to one vote? In 1770, Jean-Charles de Borda, a French mathematician and political scientist, recognized this conundrum and created a fresh system of voting called the Borda count. The Borda count allows individuals to rank their preferences for candidates, and more points are awarded to the higher-ranked candidates for each individual's ballot. How will this fix our voting system? First and foremost, campaigns will go from being driven by negativity to cooperation. Candidates, rather than tearing down every opponent, will have reason to affirm what's good and true in the words of other politicians. This alone will cause individuals to be more willing to pay attention to politics and allow opportunity to bring about unifying and not just divisive individuals into the political system, which can also translate into the legislative chambers themselves. Multiple parties will have a chance to have a foothold. If we're good Republicans or Democrats, why do we care if third parties have a chance? If nothing else, because new issues are brought to the forefront of politics. When there's only two parties, we only hear the same mantras on the same issues. But new parties bring new perspectives on issues that no one knew were issues before. Why don't we hear anything about Social Security reform? The Social Security Fund is set to run dry in 20 years. We've got to do something about it. But doing something about it requires raising taxes or cutting benefits, both of which are unpopular and therefore causing both established parties to be mostly quiet about it. So, this issue of the reform of our voting system is my call to arms. I saw a flaw, and I saw that we could make something that's already served our country well for many years and make it better. Again, I'm sorry I could not be here today, but I hope you check out my website, www.benbrownforiowa.com, or my Facebook page, at Ben Brown for Iowa, for more information. I've enjoyed the campaign. It's been a wonderful chance to meet many people and Ames and have good conversations about government. I hope you all here today have an enjoyable time discussing the weighty matters of government, and I wish the best of luck to the other candidates. Sincerely, Ben Brown. Okay, Lisa.
Thank you, Judy, and thank you to everyone who's here this evening, and thanks for the League for sponsoring the forum this evening. I am Lisa Heddens, and I represent Wards 2 and 4 in Ames. I currently serve on the Appropriations, Human Resources, and Transportation Committee, and then I'm the ranking member of the Health and Human Services Budget, which covers the Department on Aging, Public Health, Human Services, Veterans Affairs, and the Iowa Veterans Home. When I first ran for office, one of the big reasons for me was to focus on issues related to disabilities. I have two adult, I want to call them children, but I guess they're adults now, and my youngest has an intellectual disability. And seeing the challenges of navigating the quote-unquote disability field in applying for services for him told me either I can complain about it or do something about it, and ran for office. I think during my tenure we have made some great strides on behalf of people with disabilities, but I'm very concerned with the unilateral turn to privatization of Medicaid and the impact that it has had on people within our state. Over 500,000 people in Iowa are on Medicaid. And to break that down, about 60% of those are children, 20% are adults, and another 20% are people with disabilities or seniors. But when it comes to expenditures, about 79% of the expenditures fall on people with disabilities and seniors. So when you talk about reductions within the system, it is going to impact that population the most. And that is what we have seen over the last couple years. Since the institution of privatization of Medicaid, the top three issues from the Managed Care Ombudsman's Office, their complaint department, has been the reduction, denial, and termination of services every single month. They have gone from about 100 complaints a month to up to over 300 complaints a month. Significant issue that is impacting a very vulnerable population. My hope with this next legislative session is that we can start making some changes to our current managed care system, pulling some of it back into under state control so that individuals are maintaining the services that they need that are vital for their living, and providers are receiving adequate support and payment. That has been the other big issue, is providers are maybe getting paid, but they're not getting paid the correct amount or timely, and is causing a great hardship for those particular providers. The other area that the legislature has worked on, and we've made great strides on, is in regards to mental health care. We've moved from a county-based system to a regional-based system. We've identified some core services, and in the last legislative session, we expanded out as to what our core plus services for that complex needs population. So we are continuing to make strides in that particular area, but we do have a concern in regards to long-term funding of our mental health system. So those are some couple areas that we will need to be looking at soon, so that we don't have folks that are going to be reduced or denied any particular services, and that counties who don't have the ability to raise a tax to fund that any further have the funding mechanisms in order to meet those particular needs. I look forward to your questions this evening, and I again thank you for the invitation to be here.
Thank you, Lisa. Tim, would you like to go next?
Thank you very much, Judy. Hello, everyone. My name is Tim Winter, and I'm running for Iowa House of Representatives in District 48. In District 48, that includes the towns of Slater, Sheldahl, Gilbert, and the townships of Franklin and Lafayette in northern Story County. Except for these areas, this district is primarily an agricultural district, and I'm kind of excited about that. See, I graduated from Iowa State University with degrees in agricultural business and agronomy, and as an agronomist, I have worked with farmers and agribusinesses throughout this district, and especially right here in Story County. I started out at Heart of Iowa Co-op for 2 summers working for Jim Penny as a crop scout while I was going to school, for instance. My wife and partner for over 29 years, Kelly, is a research biologist with the USDA in Ames. We have 2 kids, Jacob, age 11, and Ariana, age 9, who both attend Ballard schools, one in Huxley and the other one in Cambridge. Now, we all live on an acreage just west of Kelly, where we grow and process much of what our family actually eats. You see, both my wife and I are farm kids. We have several produce gardens that supply our family, our friends, and our neighbors. We like to donate the surplus to food banks and also some of the local churches, and then we sell enough just to help pay for the inputs like seed. Our kids are the 5th generation Iowans. Like your children and your grandchildren, they are the future of Iowa. And that is why I am running. I want to build Iowa up. We need to build up our communities in this district. We must create good-paying jobs and help small businesses to grow. High-speed internet must be provided throughout the district, including the rural areas. The district needs access to affordable health care, health facilities, and education. My opponent, if he was here, was going to talk about how great Iowa is already, how it is ranked number 1 in some publication. Tell that to 40.5% of all the Iowa students whose families' income was so low last year that they are now eligible for free or reduced price school lunches. Burnside Township in Webster County, which is in my district, 36.7% of the households received food stamps last year. 36.7% of households. I think we can do better. My opponent is going to say, or was going to say, how effective the massive tax breaks and tax credits have been for Iowa. During the last general session, the Republican-controlled legislature and leadership slashed funds for the Department of Human Services, the Department of Public Health, the Department of Corrections, the Iowa Skilled Worker Agency, Job Creation Fund, Agencies on Aging, Unions, Iowa Court Systems, the Department of Public Safety, the Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship, the Department of Natural Resources, Planned Parenthood, the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture, and, of course, education. You just need to ask yourself, If the tax breaks and tax credits have spurred the type of growth that the Republicans say that they are experiencing, then why are we not increasing funding instead of cutting funding for all these vital agencies? The Republicans are in a pickle. They want to increase tax breaks and tax credits to over $2 billion this next session. That means more cuts to more agencies that will hurt lower and middle-class families. Ask yourself, to get there, what do you think they will go after next? The Republican-controlled legislature has made Iowa quite unappealing to professionals, such as in mental health and education fields. We now have great difficulty in attracting professionals to our state and keeping them here in Iowa. We are experiencing worker shortages, so they are now proposing stopgaps, like lowering requirements for training or bringing back retirees to help fill in where we have shortages. This is not a good long-term strategy. Simply put, these cuts to funding has been devastating. Certainly, these are big issues that need to be addressed in the next legislative session. We need to come together as a state and bring the common sense attitude and determination that is needed to the Iowa legislature. We need someone who will fight for Iowans. That is what I plan to do. That is why I am running for Iowa House of Representatives. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. On behalf of Rob Bacon, I will read his statement here. Good evening. I'm sorry that I cannot be present tonight, but it is impossible to be at two places at the same time. I am an Iowan by choice. I came to Iowa to attend college. While at college, I worked at a funeral home in Oskaloosa. After earning my BA, I attended Mortuary Science School in Chicago, where I earned a degree in mortuary science. I returned to Iowa and have been in the funeral profession for over 40 years. Recently, we sold our funeral homes, crematory, and business. It is our hope that we can spend more time with family and grandkids. I married my high school sweetheart, Carol, 42 years ago. Carol earned her nursing degree in Boone at DMAC and works for McFarland Clinics. We have four grown children. Our firstborn, Joanna, is a public school teacher. Her husband, Aaron, is a family physician in Iowa Falls. Our second daughter, Jennifer, is a medical transcriptionist. Her husband, Justin, is director of marketing and public relations for Kirkwood College in Cedar Rapids. John, our first son, works in Ames at Danfoss. Jeff, John's twin brother, an ISU grad, is an Army veteran and works for the National Park Service in Colorado. We have five grandchildren. As you heard, our family is involved in education, health care, and the environment. These are issues that have been and still are important to our family. My involvement in the state legislature reflects these values. Over the past years, we have increased K-12 funding by over $730 million. This historic investment education is fourth best in the nation. Our high school graduation rate is the best in the nation. We are the national leader in STEM, and we are eighth in the nation for teacher salaries. I voted for an additional $11 million in funding to address school transportation costs. I also voted for several bills this session that will provide additional tools needed to provide our schools safety. This includes ensuring that staff is properly trained in the event of an emergency, giving schools funding flexibility to hire security personnel, and providing schools with additional resources to upgrade schools with new security features. This past year, both parties came together and passed a comprehensive mental health reform bill that will support those dealing with mental illness by closing gaps in the system. We passed legislation to help combat the opioid epidemic that will prevent doctor shopping, reduce overprescribing, and support those who are suffering from addiction. For our rural areas, I voted to ensure that telehealth care is covered by insurance, ensuring that greater access to essential health care services in rural Iowa. I voted to hold MCOs accountable to providers and patients while bringing stronger oversight to managed care. I chair the National Resource Committee in the House of Representatives. Protecting our wildlife, forests, air, and water is important to every Iowan. This year, the first bill passed was a water quality bill. This bill is not a cure-all for our lakes and streams. It is, however, a step in the right direction. This year, I have been endorsed by the Iowa Farm Bureau, the Iowa Corn Growers Association, the National Rifle Association, Life Right Action, the National Federation of Business Owners, and the Iowa Association of Business and Industry. Thank you, Rob Bacon.
you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Thank you to the League of Women Voters for Ames and Story County for that forum of candidates running for the open seats for the Iowa House Districts 45, 46, and 48. Folks from Workforce Solutions will be stopping by shortly. Stay tuned. Before we go there, though, let's check in with the natural world. Here's KHOI's environmental reporter, Pat Schlarbaum.
Phenology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. The first cicada of summer or the last monarch butterfly in autumn are noted in a journal for future reference and comparisons from year to year. And as Lee Searles of White Rock Conservancy writes, phenology is the study of natural cycles in the lives of living animals and plants. Today's phenology is about eastern tiger salamanders. In the gathering dusk, on another rainy evening, there was movement in the roadway ahead. Four-legged creatures the size of ground squirrels were ambling ever so carefully to cross the road. As I slowed to let the salamander pass, there were four more in the distance. Their annual rite of passage, returning to their overwintering sites, is upon these early autumn, October days. The eastern tiger salamander is Iowa's largest and most abundant salamander, which are amphibian critters that spend some portion of their life in water. There are four other salamanders in the state, the endangered blue-spotted salamander, eastern newt, common mud puppy, and a smallmouth salamander. The eastern tiger salamander is found throughout Iowa. Adults are 7 to 8 inches long. Its body is very dark brown with random small yellow blotches. Tiger salamanders, although abundant, are also the most secretive salamanders in our state. Nearly all of their time is spent underground in burrows of other animals or burrows they have constructed themselves. This allows them to escape temperature extremes above ground and may explain why they have such a wide variety of habitats. And their habitats include open pastures, prairies, cultivated fields, forests, and even towns as our urban areas sprawl into their previous range. They often fall into window wells or are found in damp basements. Occasionally, they are found above ground on damp or humid evenings. A primary requirement in their lives are ponds, lakes, marshes, or other permanent bodies of water in which to breed. Like other amphibians that spend some portion of their life cycle in water, they are good swimmers. Highly voracious predators, they emerge from their burrows at night to feed on worms, crickets, and insects, frogs, and even other salamanders. Adult salamanders have many enemies, so they secrete a milky toxin from glands on the back and tail for defense, and that milky toxin is very unappealing. Tiger salamanders are preyed upon by badgers, snakes, bobcats, and owls. The only time they are found above ground in numbers are during heavy spring and fall rains while they migrate to and from their overwintering sites. The terrestrial adults overwinter underground in burrows or other debris beginning in October. Like all ambystomotids, they are extremely loyal to their birthplaces and will travel long distances to reach them, upwards of a mile. In the breeding season of late winter, early spring, tiger salamanders migrate to temporary ponds created by melted snow and rainwater, where large numbers of salamanders gather to mate. Tiger salamanders breed in spring, often before all the ice is melted from the pond's surface. Females lay 30 to 50 eggs in loose masses. The larvae metamorphose between June and August. The larvae grow quickly in warmer water. Tiger salamanders have declined in abundance in the last 20 years. I do not see as many as I used to during fall migrations in Milford Township, northeast of Ames. However, aquatic researcher from Drake University, Dr. Jim Christensen, has shown an increase in tiger salamanders. It is presumed that this increase reflects new localities for tiger salamanders with enhanced awareness from more people reporting and not their population size at a given locality. They may be declining more in some areas than others due to variable circumstances. A single tiger salamander has only a 50% chance of breeding more than once in its lifetime, and they can live 10 to 12 years. Large-scale captive breeding of tiger salamanders have not been successful for unknown reasons. It is known that acid rain from coal-fired energy plants also kills salamanders because their skin is very sensitive to deadly chemicals. Conserving marshes and other water bodies and adjacent open prairies will help eastern tiger salamander populations, as many are killed by cars as they cross roads in spring and autumn en route to and from their breeding sites. Roadways can become wildlife corridors, like ribbons of habitat, that link natural areas one after another, especially when it comes to river greenbelt areas, like we see along the Skunk River. So as we travel in the coming weeks before freeze-up, please keep an eye peeled for these terrestrial marvels. Their very presence is a positive indicator that their population is holding on in their methodical marching onward to decent water. And that's our phenology for today, migrating salamanders. This is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio. Become a station member at our website, khoifm.org, and locate the donate button. Background music is John Barleycorn Must Die by Traffic.
Thank you, Pat. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. And I have been joined by Brenda Dreyer with the Ames Economic Development and Director of Workforce Solutions. Brenda, it's good to have you back. And you have news.
It's an exciting weekend here in Ames. But on the workforce front, we have a great deal more than just a cyclone victory to celebrate this morning. We are celebrating that in the last week, Ames and Story County have been named the number one job market in the United States by CNBC.
That's really something.
It is something. And I mean, we are traditionally, if not the lowest, one of the lowest unemployment rates in the whole country. Here of late, really in the last couple of years, as you look at our job growth, we've had really solid job growth. That's one of the things that gets looked at. But I would tell you really in the last 90 days, we've had a number of very exciting expansions from our business and industry related to growth. When you have a very low unemployment, if you are not really creating opportunities that are paying at or above the average and are offering benefits, you're not finding folks. So the types of jobs that we have available on a full-time basis are outstanding opportunities.
Talk to us a little bit about the economic development projects that are going on.
So what's real exciting as we work to support the whole county, really what we're seeing now is not only job growth here in Ames, but we've seen a couple very exciting projects over in Nevada. A couple months ago, we announced a project at Mid-States Millwright Builders. They are building a brand new facility and hiring a lot of skilled trade people to support their operation. I was there on Friday to do a visit, and I was so impressed with the caliber of the facilities.
What exactly are they?
These are folks that are actually constructing things out of metals and really supporting our ag industry and our industrial industry. It's an amazing company that's locally owned, but they're doing welding and they're doing production work really related around metals and metalworking. So in the last 90 days has decided to expand their operations, and we're seeing them more than double the size of their facility in Nevada. Another project in Nevada that is very exciting is the Burke Corporation, a long, long-standing company here in the county, very generous company. All of us that enjoy pizza and subs, more than likely those products originate from Nevada. They're now a subsidiary of Hormel, based out of Austin, Minnesota. Hormel was just recently named one of the top employers in the country. It's a company that I'm very familiar with and would attest to the quality of benefits. The Burke family, the Burke Corporation, and now Hormel have been very generous with food donations as well as monetary donations, but truly their expansion that they've announced here in the last 15 days will, again, double their facility here in Nevada and Story County. And again, it's a food company, but it's really a cooking and freezing company, a very clean, beautiful facility. And again, they've chose to double their operations in Nevada. Those are some outstanding jobs, and they attract a workforce for quite a distance to actually work there. We've seen some very neat announcements down in Huxley. We've seen in the last month or so a company called AutoMed make an announcement there, and they're really involved in some specialized pharmaceutical livestock area. will be hiring upwards towards 40 positions here in the next few years down in Huxley, going into the area called Blue Sky Commons right along the interstate. We celebrated a ribbon cutting there at a company called Innovative Technologies last week. They actually make product for the ethanol industry, and so they've built a beautiful facility in that same industrial area. So we're celebrating with the community of Huxley. And up in Story City, a company called Eby, who makes livestock trailers, is actually going to be bringing in two new lines of business that we're not quite ready yet to talk about the details, but they'll be creating 64 wonderful employment opportunities, 40 of them for welders, and welders are in high demand. So if there's anybody in the audience that can weld or knows somebody that can weld or wants to weld, please reach out to us, because we've got a number of great welding opportunities coming up. Again, that's an operation that'll more than double in the community of Story City. And we've got fun projects here in Ames, too. 3M, a long-standing company in our community, has decided to do some reconfiguring, bring in some new equipment, and add some additional workforce here to their facility. I tell folks all the time that it's great when a new company wants to come in and join your community. It's even better when one that's here likes you well enough to expand, because it furthers their commitment and adds another hook of investment to keeping them here. And then we also have a couple new agriculture startups, Smart Ag and Performance Livestock, that have moved to new facilities here in Ames. And it's fun to see these companies that start with one or two young people and start aggressively hiring people so they can grow out their business. So we have lots to celebrate here in Ames and Story County.
What is Smart Ag?
So again, Smart Ag is really technology related to enhancing, you know, farm operations. And again, so I'd like to think about, not only is that impacting our community with good jobs here and the investment in technology, but I like to think about the impact we're having on a worldwide basis with our university and the companies that are being spurred out of Iowa State and the Research Park.
So lots of movement.
Lots of movement. It gets me up early and I stay late, and the whole team is focused on dividing these projects up and making sure that we're not just supporting them at the time of announcement, to make sure that we actually see them through with implementation.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of jobs is the Ames Economic Development trying to attract?
So, you know, we have a real focus in our office as leads come in either from the state of Iowa directly into our office. You know, we really do need to make sure that they're a good match for our infrastructure and what we have available in our infrastructure. We're not doing the prospects or our existing companies any favors if we're not really scrutinizing the types of jobs that they're creating. Are they, again, paying at or above our average? Are they offering aggressive benefit packages? And are they a complement to the jobs we have here already? So we pay very close attention to the types of jobs, what our current jobs are, and how does a potential prospect fit into that. So sometimes we need to say no, just because we believe that it isn't a good match. And so that's part of the work we do.
So in your evaluation, I'm hearing you say the salary level is one criteria.
Absolutely.
Benefits are another.
Yep. You know, I part of our jobs and why I continue to stay in economic development is keeping in mind the impact we're having on families. So I'm not naive enough to figure that everybody in Ames has a great job and they're having an easy time. I know quite the opposite is true. And so our job then becomes to say, how do we provide opportunities to get those folks training? How do we get them connected so they know that these jobs exist? Like I said, there are good jobs. It's just how do we bridge where people are at, where they may not be earning a living wage and having access to benefits, to connecting them to these good opportunities. So we work real closely with DMAC to try to identify some training. But that really leads me to one of the next pieces that I feel like I'm real excited about. So I don't know exactly when the Iowa Works Office left, or what used to be called Job Service, left Ames, but it really did leave a hole in our services. And some of those things, I know a lot of places have tried to bridge and be helpful. I was taking calls a couple times a week from folks that needed additional help with trying to find a job. And so we're very excited to announce that our partners at Iowa Workforce Development have reopened an Iowa office, and our Ames office, excuse me. They got lots of offices in Iowa, but in Ames,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so explain exactly what Iowa Work Office.
So it's
Iowa Workforce.
It's Iowa Workforce Development is the department of the state, but
it's called the Iowa Works Office.
Yeah. So that's what you're going to see on the signs.
And what is that?
So if I'm a job seeker, I can go to the Iowa Works Office and I can get help with putting a resume together, finding a job online. Maybe I don't have a computer. If I have a computer, it doesn't have good internet access. I can go and do that in a safe and supportive environment. Let's say I haven't interviewed in a while. You can go to the Iowa Works Office and they'll actually conduct mock interviews with you. Wow. They'll show you how to look on workinames.com and how to search Indeed and how to utilize LinkedIn in order to make connections on jobs. And they have their own job board too called Iowa Jobs that if I jumped on there today probably has 1,000 job openings on it. So
this is a support system for somebody looking for a job. And this is available to everybody.
It is available to everybody. Mm-hmm. Our taxpayer dollars fund that. So
that's great. Where are they going to be?
They opened on September 26th. And so our offices are working to help them to get the word out. But they are actually located at 903 Lincoln Way. Had to look down at my notes because I know they're right across from the DOT office in a little brick building.
So where the credit union is?
I'm down a little bit further to
the
west.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
But a brick building, and you can park behind, and it's got a white sign on the front that says Iowa Works. But also for folks that have found themselves unemployed by no action of their own, can go in and they can assist with unemployment as well. So it's great to have that here in Ames again.
That's fabulous. Website?
We direct people all the time to workinames.com.
Workinames.com.
Yeah, that's really where we have 1,700 of these job opportunities posted. If folks need help getting to Iowa Works, they can call our offices and we can help. But it's right on Lincoln Way across from the DOT and they're there to help.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Brenda Dreyer with the Ames Economic Development and Director of Iowa Workforce Solutions. And Brenda, time flies when you're talking such
when we're sharing good news.
It's amazing. Action-packed report that you just brought. Thank you so much. You have been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. Any last words you want to say?
No, I would say that we are so blessed to live in such a great community and a great county, and
thank you.
Thank you for the time.
And Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI. Remember, you can also hear a recording of this show later on to our website, khoifm.org, and we are streaming live. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD of Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk was engineered today by Cynthia McClure. Thank you, Cynthia. Remember to register to vote if you're not already registered. Early registration ends on October 27. After that, you will be able to register up until Election Day, but you will be required to have an ID after the 27th. Remember, you can find information about registering and voting at vote411.org. Vote411.org. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! And headline news at 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Thank you for listening, and remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again.
Support for KHOI comes from Stevens Auditorium, presenting Celtic Thunder X, an Irish male vocal group that will feature new songs and traditional Irish musical instruments on Wednesday, October 17th at 7:30 p.m. More information can be found at center.iastate.edu.